Good morning. This is a meeting of the Title Setting Board pursuant to Article 40 of Title I CRS. The time is 10:05. The date is Wednesday, January 17, 2018. We're meeting in the Secretary of State's Aspen Room, 1700 Broadway, Denver, Colorado. Title Setting Board today consists of myself, Suzanne Steyer, Deputy Secretary of State on behalf of Wayne Williams, Glenn Roper, Assistant Solicitor General, Designee of Attorney General Cynthia Kaufman, and Jason Gallander, Designee of Office of Legislative Legal Services. For anyone who wishes to testify, there's a sign-up sheet on the back table, and this hearing is being broadcast over the internet from the Secretary of State's website. Today, when the Title Board considers a proposed initiative for the first time, the Board will follow three steps. First, the Board may wish to ask questions of the proponents. This is to ensure that the Board understands the proposal. Second, the Board will determine if it has jurisdiction to set title. In particular, the Board must determine if the measure complies with the single subject rule prescribed in Article 5, Section 1, 5.5 of the Colorado Constitution and Section 1-40106.5 Colorado Revised Statutes. This is because the Board is prohibited from setting a title for a measure that contains more than one subject. If the measure is a constitutional change, the Board will consider under CRS 1-40106.35 whether the measure only repeals in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution. If the Board determines it has jurisdiction to set a title, then the Board will use a staff-prepared draft for discussion purposes. A copy of the staff draft is on the table. Generally, we take all testimony first, then the Board will discuss and vote after all testimony is completed. A decision is reached by two of the three members of the Board. Please take note, we are not concerned with the merits of any proposal here. We are only concerned with the setting of title. Furthermore, we are not concerned with the legal or constitutional objections to the measures, except to the extent that such objections relate to the jurisdiction of the Board to set titles or the correctness of the title and summary themselves. Anyone who's dissatisfied with the decision of the Title Board may file a motion for rehearing with the Secretary of State within 7 calendar days. First item on the agenda today is Initiative 2017-2018, number 97, setback requirements for oil and gas. Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Martha Tierney on behalf of the proponents, Ann Lee Foster and Suzanne Spiegel, who are both here present and have signed their affidavits.
All right. So if we could just start out, why don't you tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
So the single subject of the measure is establishing a statewide minimum distance requirement for new oil and gas development.
Okay. And is there anyone else signed up to speak on this issue? No?
I don't think so. Okay. I didn't put out sign-up sheets. Okay. So.
Well, let's just start with single subject. Does anyone have any questions on the single subject?
No.
Okay. Can we make a motion?
Sure. I would move that we find proposed initiative 2718 number 97 has a single subject and that we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye. Aye.
All right. So that takes us to the initiative itself. And I pulled the language we did a couple years ago, and maybe you could just walk through what changes you
sure.
had in the initiative from, I can't remember the number. I
have it was 78.
Somewhere. Yeah, 78.
So, as you rightly indicate, Madam Deputy Secretary, the initiatives are very, very similar, and thus the title, that the staff draft title, is very, very similar. The proponents have really made maybe three changes that I can highlight. One is that it's a statutory measure, not a constitutional measure. Two is that the language for the additional protected areas in 78, were the term was areas of special concern, and they have changed that this time around to be vulnerable areas. But the definitions are almost, I think, identical, with the exception of instead of using the catch-all include in the definition, they have changed it to a means, so the definition is defined, but added or other vulnerable areas as designated by the state or a local government, so that it's more fixed as to what the areas would be, and persons seeking to develop will know what those areas are, if either on the list or designated by a state or local government. And then I think the other change is that in 78, the, it was the defined term for what we were creating this, the distance from was called oil and gas development facilities, and that term was defined. Now it is a narrower definition for oil and gas development. And you can see that in 2B of the measure, that it's slightly narrower than the facilities language from 78. I think those are the highlights.
All right. So in terms of the proposed, the staff draft, do you have any, it looks like they just then changed the revised statutes from Constitution, and they changed oil and gas development from development facilities. And they changed additional protection where they used to have specified areas or whatever it was.
And the proponents are fine with this staff draft. Again, as you all know, we've been up and down to the Supreme Court now twice on similar measures with similar titles, and yeah. So we're fine with it as drafted. We think it gives the voters a good understanding of what the salient issues in the measure are, and I'll leave it at that.
All right. Any questions from the board? Anyone want to see 78? I brought it.
I've got it. I do have one question. In section 3, where it talks about, it's kind of the meat of the section. It says they must be located at least 2,500 feet from an occupied structure or vulnerable area. Do you interpret that to mean from any or from all occupied structures? And the reason I'm asking is because with respect to 2015-16 number 78, the title that we set said it's required to be located at least 2,500 feet from the nearest occupied structure and other specified areas. The staff draft for number 97 just mirrors the language in the initiative, just saying feet from an occupied structure or an area designated for additional protection.
Thank you for that question. I think... they mean the same thing. The intent was that they mean the same thing, and I think in practically speaking, if the development must be 2,500 feet from an occupied structure, it has to be 25 feet from all occupied structures. So I think it would mean the same.
That's the intent of the measure.
Yes.
Okay. So as between those two ways of phrasing the title, do you have a preference, either just saying from an occupied structure, as in the current staff draft, or from saying the nearest occupied structure, as we did it with 78?
Do you have a preference? No preference.
If I may, my thought would be just in the title, where it says an occupied structure, to just change that to any, and then after structure, strike or an, and just say and any before area.
You have any comment on that, Ms. Turney?
Okay. It's fine.
I just would go with and, because I think, because you want it to be 2,500 feet away from both of these things.
Yes.
Right? Here we go.
I think that's clear. As long as we're confident that that is an accurate description of what the measure would do.
Well, the language, if I might, from 78 is the same. So the Supreme Court has passed on that, as in the, in to the extent that the 78 title, So the language in the 78 measure was the same, and the language in the 78 title was the nearest occupied. I think
right.
any and nearest in that context mean the same thing, but
yeah, I'm comfortable with the change that Jason proposed.
Okay.
If we wanted to talk about other things in the title, my other thought was to, I don't know that we need the word away on line four, at least 2,500 feet away from. And then also on line four near the end, a comma after additional protection. So those were the other two little things I thought. I don't know if you want to.
Why the comma? Because I don't think it's a series. I mean, it's two clauses. It's one 2,500 feet and then one increasing. The other and is still part of the first clause, I think.
You want to jump in this debate?
I don't feel strong.
I don't have my strunk and white on me, but I'm not really concerned about it either way.
I guess I was reading it just as a separate clause from the changing existing distance requirements. You know, in connection therewith, first, changing existing distance requirements, and second, authorizing the state or local government. But
yeah, that's how I read it, too. I just, when it's only two, I don't know we need a comma, because it's not like a series. It's just two.
It's okay. The Oxford comma.
Actually not, but.
Yeah, I don't feel strongly about it.
Okay. Should I just move to adopt the changes as we've seen them on the screen?
Sure. Go ahead.
All right, I move we adopt the changes as they're now on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right, I think that's it on that one. All right, unless we have anything else.
Nothing on my end. Thank you very much.
All right, thanks.
Do we need to read it or?
We already adopted the changes, so.
Okay.
Yeah, I think we're good to go. Not a rehearing, so.
Okay.
I think the changes are as reflected on the screen.
All right, so just, you don't want.
I'll read them. All right, it's short enough, I'll read it. It's a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning a statewide minimum distance requirement for new oil and gas development and connection therewith, changing existing distance requirements to require that any new oil and gas development be located at least 2,500 feet from any occupied structure and any designated for any area designated for additional protection and authorizing the state or a local government to increase the minimum distance requirement. All right. Thank you. All right. That takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018 number 95.
We may need to take a brief pause as the designated representatives for number 95 are still completing the affidavits, but the notary okay. will All be right. completing them momentarily.
All right. We'll take a quick break.
All set.
All right, we are back on the record for proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 95. Mr. Gruskin.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair. My name is Mark Gruskin. I'm appearing here before the title board on behalf of the two named proponents, both of whom have executed their affidavits, and I'd like them to introduce themselves for the record.
Sure. For the record, my name is Carla Castedo.
And I'm Robert Duray.
Thank you. All right, let's start with a single subject. Mr. Gruskin, do you want to tell us what you believe the single subject of your measure is?
Yes, Madam Chair. This measure addresses accountability through the creation of a Congressional Redistricting Commission.
Okay. And do we have anyone else signed up, Steve? No. Okay. Any questions from the board on single subject?
Have any?
Or I don't.
Okay. I do have a question. I have two concerns. The first one is taking a look at the case title ballot, title and submission clause for 2015-16, number 132. The court had a holding that fundamentally changing the role of the Judicial Nominating Commission is a separate subject from the modification of the redistricting commission and redistricting process. Here we have this provision where the chief judge of the Colorado Court of Appeals gets to select some of the members of the commission, and I'm a little bit concerned that that may have the same issue that 132 did. I'd just like you to provide your take on that.
I'd be happy to respond to that. Thank you, Mr. Gellender. As you know, the Supreme Court Nominating Commission is a constitutional entity, and because it is a separate commission established in the Constitution, the Supreme Court in 2016 found that both changing that commission and creating a new commission that would address both redistricting and reapportionment violated the single subject requirement. As you know, the Court of Appeals is not even addressed in the Colorado Constitution, much less the role of the chief judge. And therefore, there is no concern about somehow changing a provision of the Constitution in a way that is lumped in with a previous change to the Constitution. Colorado Court of Appeals is a statutory body, and the role of the chief judge is provided solely by statute.
Is that a distinction with a difference? I mean, under the case, was it very clear that it was the constitutionality of the body that mattered?
The answer is yes, primarily because the Supreme Court Nominating Commission was created to remove politics from that particular process, which was the nomination of judges for the Court of Appeals and the Supreme Court. The Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals has absolutely no role, not only with redistricting and reapportionment, but with somehow having, other than consistent with the judicial canons, having to remain arm's length from politics. So.
Okay. It just seems to me we have a somewhat similar thing. I mean, I know in this process, inherently, the courts are involved in terms of the judicial review of maps and things, although I think that's consistent with their normal constitutional function of judicial review. This puts the nonpartisan judiciary in a position of, selecting nominees for a commission that's involved in what's historically been sort of an inherently partisan process, although obviously the intent of the measure is to make it much less so, or not at all so.
I would just add that, the measures that have preceded these two to the title board, 48, 50, 67, 68, 69, all had roles either for retired judges in certain instances or senior judges who continued to have exactly the kind of judicial role that you ascribe to the chief judge of the Court of Appeals, probably a much more hands-on role for senior judges.
Yeah, okay. I think I didn't sit for some of those, at least. I saw the retired. I don't know that I saw senior, that yeah. There were actively serving ones there. And the retired, I think, are distinguishable because they're not still serving. You know, they're just citizens, really, at this point. Okay. Anyone else have anything on that? Then I do have one more concern. This is in subsection 8 of the measure, and it's sort of in a bit of a similar vein. And this requires the Colorado Supreme Court on appeal if the commission fails to adopt a map. They have to adopt the map proposed by an individual commissioner or other qualified applicant that is most responsive to the court's directions or most closely complies with the redistricting factors. But it doesn't say that that map actually has to meet all the constitutional requirements. It just says that it has to be the best one that they're provided with. My concern there is, are we fundamentally changing the role of the court, you know, in judicial review by saying you don't have discretion to really review this for constitutionality. You just have to review it for it being closest to what you want, whether it's actually in constitutional or compliance or not. So what I'm concerned about is a potential second subject of altering the nature of judicial review.
Well, let me also raise 4850, 67, 68, 69. We raised that as a possible single subject concern where those provisions open the Supreme Court process to new evidence. And the decision of the title board was that's not a second subject. So I think to some extent the board has already addressed that in the redistricting context. But I'm not really sure I understand the nature of your concern in the first instance. The second sentence of subsection 8A, the Supreme Court must determine whether the approved map is in accord with the Constitution and federal law. And then at that point, if those factors aren't met, the court returns the map to the commission with directions about the changes needed. If there's a supermajority map, then that's the map that gets sent to the Supreme Court. If there isn't, the court can consider a series of maps and adopt the changes that are responsive to the directions it provided. Remember, the directions it provided have to do with the constitutionality of the measure. And therefore, I don't think you're changing the nature of judicial review so much as stating it and restating it.
Okay. Yeah, it may be a little bit of, how would they say, persnickety. The concern is just the Supreme Court must adopt the proposed changes that are most responsive to the directions it provided to the Citizens Commission. You know, the concern is that, well, what if the changes come in and they're all pretty lousy and one is slightly less lousy than the other, so that's most responsive, but it's still not really responsive. That's where I'm coming from, for what it's worth.
I hear you. I don't think that the court somehow renounces its authority and its role to ensure compliance with the federal and the state constitutions because of this amendment.
Okay.
And I don't think we could write a measure that says ignore the United States Constitution. So I think your concern gets addressed by the nature of judicial review, if not by the express language.
Okay. I'm done. If anyone else has anything, then.
You have anything?
No.
Okay. Any discussion, or you want to make a motion?
I think you guys
Yeah, I can make a motion. Well, I'm trying to. I'll let someone who thinks they who's had this decided in their heads make the motion, and I'll think about it while you do that.
Well, I'm interested, Jason, if you have any reaction to the discussion. I hadn't considered the issues that you raised, and now that you've had a little back and forth, are you still thinking about it, or do you have?
I mean, I guess, you know, it raised concerns. I think given that, you know, I hadn't realized, I don't think, that we did have the senior judges in the prior, as opposed to only retired ones in the prior ones we've set for. So I think consistent with our precedents and, you know, the general interests of giving the benefit of the doubt to proponents if you're uncertain, I think I'm willing to let it go. I could possibly be convinced otherwise at a rehearing if someone objects, but maybe we'd have more time to figure it out then.
As to the second concern is, to make sure I understand it, is your concern that Section 8 raises the possibility of requiring the Supreme Court to adopt a map that does not comply with other state constitutional requirements?
Yes.
Okay.
And just so I understand, are you talking about requirements relating to redistricting or some other requirements?
Yeah, I think... Let's see, this is with the map, so yeah, with the things pertaining to redistricting.
So I just to state where I am, I see those two concerns. I think, you know, based on, I think there are some differences between the 132 and what this initiative is trying to do with the use of the Chief Judge of the Court of Appeals. And then I see the latter. The second point is potentially a theoretical issue. I probably tend to agree with Mr. Gruskin that, as a practical matter, I'm not sure that would come up or that the Supreme Court would interpret it in that way. And I suppose, you know, I could be swayed otherwise by a rehearing petition, but I think I'm inclined to find that it does constitute a single subject.
Well, and I think even if it did change the criteria for the Supreme Court's review, if you're changing the criteria and that's a single subject, you could change the criteria for review too without running afoul. So I'm not sure even if beyond theory it was, as long as it's dealing only with congressional redistricting, I don't see the issue.
Okay. So I'll go ahead and move that as to 2017-18 number 95 constitutes a single subject and the board has jurisdiction to set a title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
All right. Mr. Gruskin, do you have any comment on whether this is an addition to the Constitution or merely a repeal of language?
No, this is an addition of language to the Constitution, and I would ask that the board so find.
Someone want to make a motion?
Sure. I move that proposed initiative 2017-18 number 95 concerning congressional redistricting makes amendments other than mere repeals to the Colorado Constitution, therefore requires a 55% vote for approval.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
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 All right. That takes us to the language.
I have some thoughts.
Oh, Wonderful. I hope you're going to include that billboard language, because it's my favorite part.
Well, you know, I leave that to the discretion of the board, but I'd like to provide you with a handout. I'll explain it. What I've done is to provide you with a three-page handout, which I would ask be incorporated in the record of this hearing. The first page of this handout is a comparison of the staff draft for this measure and the title board approved title for initiative number 69. There are likely to be competing ballot measures on redistricting that are placed before voters, and rather than have them have voters wonder if they are seeing the same language, we think that the staff draft could possibly lead to that level of confusion. What we've done is taken, we've basically redlined the 69 ballot title with the new language being highlighted for you on the first page. We think there is just too much language that isn't either stricken or underlined, and therefore it is confusing. We also think, honestly, that the proponents of number 69, maybe theirs was just a different focus in terms of their measure. But ours is really about providing accountability in the process, and we think page 2 shows how you can change the staff draft to highlight measures that both indicate what this measure is about and make it substantively different. And just for purposes, because I'm sure if you're anything like me and you typically go to the last chapter of the book first, the last page is simply a cleaned up version of the red line. What we've done there is highlighted the fact that this measure creates a congressional redistricting commission rather than say that the single subject is just regarding congressional redistricting. We have taken what is a fairly long phrase about the transfer of power from the legislature to the commission, and we think telescoped it down to a more readable phrase and one that is different than what would be found in the ballot title for number 69. And then we've highlighted the fact that the criteria change, and we think that is really important. The criteria change in two big ways with this measure. Number one, it highlights communities of interest and prioritizes them. By its terminology, prioritizes communities of interest. We haven't used that phrase. We've used the defined meaning of community of interest in the measure. And then we've indicated that it also provides other specified criteria, including whether districts will be competitive. And we provided the definition of competitive for two reasons. Number one, the ballot title on 69 and 69 itself doesn't refer to any definition because the proponents there leave it up to the commission. More importantly, as the board knows, a definition is important when there is an important term the meaning of which is being changed. Right now, competitiveness in Colorado under the Colorado Supreme Court's decision of Hall versus Moreno is really a function of voter registration at the time the redistricting is done. And the court in Hall versus Moreno found at least two districts in Colorado having been drawn with that kind of voter registration basis. We look at competitiveness as a function of not gearing district lines to provide some sort of preference for either an incumbent or a political party. And as you'll remember from the ballot title for number 69, you used language about prohibiting drawing redistricting plans to purposefully advantage or disadvantage any political party or person. I think that might be a related concept, but clearly it was important enough that you put it in there. And we think that the fact that these two criteria are different, Number one, communities of interest is prioritized and defined. And number two, competitiveness is changed. But it is also provided as a co-equal criteria once the priority, the mandatory and the priority considerations have been addressed. So we would suggest that you address it that way. If the makeup, if the board feels that the makeup of the commission is important, and it seems that the decisions in 48 and 50, there wasn't a written decision, but all the briefing was about the only important thing is that voters know the, not the appointing authority, but the partisan makeup of the commission. I think in light of the fact that, albeit a one-line affirmance doesn't have precedential value on the court, it might have precedential value for you. And if that is the case, we have worded the split of the commission, which happens to be a 12-member commission, and happens to have four members that are unaffiliated, four that are affiliated with the largest political party, and four with the second largest political party, differently, so that it is distinguished from the ballot title number 69. The supermajority provision, if the board finds that is important, also has been worded differently. I'm not positive that that's a central feature, but I know that you thought it was as to earlier measures, and therefore I've included it here. We've talked about the hearing process and what is important and what is distinguishing between this measure and number 69 is that anyone can present a map to the commission. And so we have indicated that as part of the hearing process. And lastly, we provided that in terms of accountability, that we are changing the public disclosure requirement for lobbyists. As you know, right now, if a lobbyist registers in month one, provides services in month two, bills for services and gets paid in month three, he or she reports in month four. Well, guess what? Month four is the time when the map is already in front of the Supreme Court. It's too late. And so we are providing for virtual real-time reporting on lobbyist activity when it comes to redistricting, because we think that people in the process ought to know, and because we think that commissioners ought to know, and because we think that people who aren't in the process, who are in the public, who are concerned, ought to know, because it may motivate them to do something. And so that's why we've included that last change. We struck the provision about judicial review because it's not in the 69 ballot title, and I doubt anyone would be shocked that there's judicial review of a redistricting map. We don't oppose it, but we just think that it seemed to be surplusage. So that's why we've made the changes we've made, and would ask you to consider them. And if you have questions, certainly we're here to answer those questions. But we believe that this title both accurately describes the central features of initiative number 95 and makes this title stand apart from the title that voters might see from a competing petition circulator.
So you kept the open meetings provision, didn't you?
Yes.
In your initiative.
We actually expanded the open meetings.
But
no, excuse me. We expanded open records. We kept the open meetings. You're right.
But you didn't put it in your question?
No, because I don't think, it's not like the reapportionment commission, when it's met, hasn't been an open process. And I think obviously there's a more...
Well, I think my concern is that it is in the other question. And does it look like you're not? I mean, if people put them next to each other, you're a voter and you're putting them next to each other and you're trying to decide which one you're going to vote yes on and which one you're going to vote no on, and one has open meetings and the other doesn't, then you may assume that one doesn't provide for that in the law.
So the reference that I believe you're speaking of in the ballot title on number 69 would be the language about requiring the commission's work be done in public meetings.
Right. I'm just wondering, should we put that in still? I mean, presuming we go off your draft, wouldn't you want that in? Because otherwise it would look like, even if you don't think it's central to your measure, doesn't it make it look like to the voters that you didn't do that and this other initiative did? And I'm going to have the kind of the same question while you're thinking about that, about using the term competitiveness, because if you use competitive in yours and then you define it, aren't people going to believe that that's the same definition of competitive in the other one? I mean, my preference is, I guess just to toss it out there, is that we say that districts cannot be drawn for the purpose of protecting or something like that, but not use the term. Because I feel like if you use the term and you don't say for purposes of this initiative or, I mean, otherwise people are going to think that definition of competitive is the same one when they line those two up.
So,
and yours is different.
Ours is different,
right? That's my concern, is that we're trying to make them different, but we don't want to confuse people.
Right, but you said in the ballot title in 69 that you were going to require the commission to consider political competitiveness after all other factors.
Right.
But didn't say, but you leave it up to the commission to define it. So,
right.
I understand your concern, but it seems to me that that was a conscious decision that the proponents of 69 made, which was not to define it. And
but I guess my concern is the voters aren't going to know that. They're going to think that that definition, that that word competitiveness in the other ballot title means the same thing as this word competitiveness, because the other ballot title doesn't define it or doesn't say the commission can define it. The other one just says competitiveness. So if I'm a voter and I line them up next to each other, I'm like, well, they both have competitiveness, and I assume the definition is this one.
So are you thinking that language that says which is defined in this initiative to mean something like that?
Or just not use the word competitiveness and just use the criteria?
I think that
one of the two. I just don't want people to believe that it's really not a distinction. The way that this is done doesn't tell people this is different than that.
Right. I think the proponents would be okay with language that says, which is defined in this initiative to mean that districts are not drawn for the purpose. And then we've, I think, met your concern. I think I don't know whether or not voters identify with competitiveness, but I think they ought to know the fact that there isn't attention being given to competitiveness in one measure and not in the other. So I think we can meet your concern without eliminating the term.
And what's your reasoning to put in the one-third and the two-thirds instead of the numbers?
Just because their measure uses the actual numbers, and because we say that it is a 12, that there are 12 commissioners down, just a little bit lower than that, right after that phrase, people, I'm sure, will be able to understand that it's four without necessarily seeing that numeral. I was obsessing a little bit,
yeah.
I admit.
I mean, it's not different, though. I mean, the math.
No, the math is exactly the same, but in terms of people saying, "Jesus, you're the commission. You're the commission with four unaffiliated or four non-major party, four major party, four second major party."
Or the one that's one third. I mean, how are you going to mess?
I admit it to obsessing.
I don't see how voters are going to.
So
we're the ones that don't make you do math. I mean, is that like your?
So to your point, if you decide that the numbers are more informative, I think the fact that it's placed near the bottom of the title will help voters distinguish the two. And so you could use the numerals, and I think not raise any sort of concerns about people thinking they're exactly the same measure.
Well, I just don't want people to think it's different, that that clause is different because in one we use numbers and in another.
It's a word problem.
I know, but it makes it, when the language is different to me, as I mean, I think putting myself in the voter's mind, since the language is different, I think that the content is different, and it wouldn't be the case here. It would just be a language change without a content change. I mean, when we highlight the differences, I want to highlight the content differences so that voters understand in this initiative I'm voting for this, and in this initiative I'm voting for that. And it seems like if we start changing around things that aren't content related, it gets even more, it's confusing enough.
So I think that to meet that concern, you could simply take out my fractions and put in numerals. In the first reference to one-third, you'd probably take out of as well. So it'd be, that line would just read, to include the requirement that four commission members be voters who are registered with no political party, four be voters who are registered with the state's largest party, and four be voters who are.
Okay.
So I think it works.
Okay. That's all I had anyway. Sorry to.
Can I ask you about registered with a political party? Because the language in the measure, I see two different terms used in the measure. First, in 4C, Roman numeral 1, 2, and 3, it uses the term affiliated with, whether they're affiliated with any political party or the state's largest or the state's second largest political party. And then in 4D, in the middle there, it uses the term unaffiliated. And then at the end, in the last sentence, in talking about the role of the chief judge, it uses the term unaffiliated members of the state's largest political party and members of the state's second largest political party. What's the connection between registered, affiliated, and members of? Do they mean different things? Do they mean?
I believe as they're used in the statutes, they all mean the same thing. So they're certainly not intended to connote different things.
So affiliated, to be affiliated with a political party, you have to be a registered member of that party?
Well, if you are, since the term for an independent voter is an unaffiliated voter, the converse would obviously be an affiliated voter. So it would be, yes, registered.
Okay. Do you have a view as to which of those terms is the correct one to use? And in your draft, you say registered. Do you have a preference or an objection to saying registered or affiliated or unaffiliated?
No objection. I just retained the language of the staff draft. I tried to look like I wasn't going to change everything. So, but if clearly the meaning is that they are registered, but because they have to be. Remember, they have to have voted in the last, one of the requirements for being a commissioner is you have to have voted in the last two general elections. You couldn't vote if you hadn't registered to vote. And when you register, you affiliate with a party. And therefore, we think affiliated is just probably Ms. Steyert can
We had this big debate last time on that term, because affiliation and registration, membership, they all mean the same thing in statute, but they may not all mean the same thing to a voter. Affiliation, it's normal, regular definition in Webster's, is closely associated with another, typically in a dependent or subordinate position. So affiliation, I think, to a voter may make them believe that this person has been vetted with the party. And that's much different than the person who can check off on a registration form, I am this or I am that. Registration just means I've made a choice as a voter. Affiliation could mean to a voter that they buy into a certain platform, and that's not necessarily true of the registration process. I mean, it's not true at all of the process in Colorado. You don't have to buy into a platform or, you know, sign something indicating you agree with this or that. You just have to check a box. So that's why we landed on registration last time around, because the proponents in that measure wanted the term unaffiliated, and the problem with the term unaffiliated is it doesn't mean you don't believe those things. It just means you didn't check the box. And voters may believe that an unaffiliated, you know, believes one way or another, and that's just not the way registration works.
Thank you.
I knew you'd know more than I did. Thank you.
This isn't the title as much as the into the initiative itself, but I have another question about in section 8A1. It talks about the duty of the Supreme Court, and maybe this is nitpicking, but there's a sentence that says, if it finds any of these factors is not met, and then talks about it, it doesn't expressly say what they should do if they find the factors are met. This is in 8A, Roman numeral 1. Is the assumption there that if the factors are met, they'll just stamp approval on it? Or am I missing a language somewhere else that...
You're not missing other language. I believe the second sentence, that if the court determines that all of the federal and state constitutional requirements are met, and it's consistent. In other words, there's been no abuse of discretion. The court would approve the map. I mean, the
okay, so there's not a separate line somewhere specifically addressing that. It's just they do whatever they do when they approve a map. Okay.
Any questions?
Not at this point.
Oh, okay. All right. Well, what's our preference? You want to go through the staff draft and put up some of Mr. Gruskin's ideas, or you want to?
I mean, I think the first thing is just decide if we're comfortable that the suggested change to the single subject from congressional redistricting to the creation of a congressional redistricting commission is something we're comfortable with and think encompasses everything that's in here.
So I actually prefer the staff draft on that particular point. So that'd be my preference to leave it as concerning congressional redistricting and maybe even put federal in there concerning federal congressional redistricting.
Okay. I mean, my preference is to just to leave the staff draft as is. I mean, my hesitation in putting in federal is that we don't have federal in the other one. It makes it look like
in 69 we don't.
Yeah. So it makes it look like, oh, this one's about federal redistricting. The other one's about something else.
I think there was one where we did put in federal, I think.
Did we? In the single subject?
The 69 ballot title you can find on page 1 of my handout. Right. In terms of, I mean, at least as to these two.
It was 50. In 50, we put federal.
Okay. Oh. Well, why'd we do that? No.
as to 69 and 95, one is a change to the statutes. The other is a change to the Constitution. In reading the single subject statement, it will jump out at people that these are different types of measures. So I think whatever the board's discretion is in terms of the right way to to address that concerning phrase. We don't object. We may.
I mean, I do think it does a little more than just create a commission, because we have, you know, lobbyist provisions and Supreme Court issues and other things. Okay. So I'm fine with federal or not, whichever on those. But.
Yeah, I would prefer to leave out federal. I mean, okay. there isn't any other kind of congressional redistricting.
Okay.
So I don't think it adds much.
Okay. So then if we're comfortable, I mean, yeah, the Constitution versus statutory will jump out. You want to keep going, Jason?
What's up?
You want to keep going?
I can.
So I'm sorry. Did the board just make a change? Because if they did, I missed it. Okay.
We have not.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think what we can do is sort of shorten things up here, and kind of split the baby a little bit between what Mr. Gruskin suggested and what the staff draft has, and say something after the therewith, like, I mean, establishing a citizens, and I don't even know that we need redistricting, and I mean, the term, I believe, is just commission in the measure, and we have redistricting in the single subject. So I would just say establishing a citizens commission and transferring the state legislature's responsibility. I think authority suggests they can do it. Responsibility says they have to do it. To divide the state into congressional districts to the commission. Let's see. And I think then we can transfer. Do we care about, because it looks like then we would delete language, the redraw congressional boundaries in the each federal census. Do we care about the each federal census remaining in, or do we think that's unnecessary?
I mean, it's not a change, so we can just.
That's a good point. To the commission, I think just kind of semicolon there. If we're sticking with the order of the staff draft, and maybe we can talk about, you know, prioritization of the clauses after, but going sort of in order, I think, and it's a question for the proponents' council as well, whether we want, because I think we can fit in, say, something like specifying the qualifications, methods of appointment for, maybe don't type yet on this one, and ethical standards that apply to the 12 commissioners. I don't know if you find that the ethical standards part is not a central feature or not, or if the board members have any take on that.
Is this where I get my billboard?
We're getting there. We're getting there. There are ethical standards. There are public meeting, public access standards.
Yeah, and I've got that down.
Okay.
Later.
I mean, we don't object to the notion of referencing ethical standards. We don't think that that somehow is going to make people.
You don't feel it's a central feature.
I don't see that. I mean, it comes back to the accountability issue, and it seems to me that the ethical provisions are not necessarily the key here.
Okay. I don't feel strong about anyone else have a take on that.
Okay. So, and where were we? As I say, specifying the qualifications and methods appointment for, I would just say the 12 commissioners. It saves a couple of words, and it gives you notice up front of how many of them there are. And then we can, and then a comma after commissioners. And I'll explain why. Then you can strike through the next and through the providing for the appointment of 12 commissioners part. Okay. I would keep the fours versus the thirds just because I think numbers are easier to understand than fractions. It's a minor thing. I might say four, instead of the R's, I might say four of whom must be registered with the state's largest political party, four of whom must be registered with the state's second largest, and four of whom must not be registered with any political party. Let's see. Oh, do we care about, the other thing I added was, do we care about the geographical diversity requirement? In this case, it's saying I would add a, think about adding a clause, and no more than two of whom may reside in the same congressional district. Again, that falls into.
I don't believe you provided any geographical distribution references in other measures. And it's not a bad, we obviously think it's a valuable aspect of the commission. I don't know that the specifics.
Did the other measure have those requirement in the actual substance of it?
Yeah, I think it did have geographical.
Yeah, it required, are you talking about geographical distribution of the hearings or of the commissioners themselves?
Of the commissioners themselves.
I believe that there had to be at least one or two commissioners from the West Slope.
Yeah, there were geographical. Okay.
It's, I mean, if it's not, if.
It's not different, if that's what you're asking. It's not substantially
right.
different.
And, okay, so if there's a concern that including it would, you know, go to your earlier concerns about overly distinguishing this one from the other one, then, and, you know, the proponents don't feel it's critical, then I don't feel a need to put it in there. I want to raise the issue.
So 69 did require at least one member in each congressional district, and then it had some west of the continental divide, east of the continental divide requirements.
Okay.
So it's kind of similar.
All right. It might be well overthought. It's my transportation finance background. People get pretty worked up about where things are going in that context. So
oh, absolutely.
Thought about it here. Okay, so leaving that out. On the criteria, is that what we're down to now?
Yes.
Line 9. Yeah, establishing factors. I mean, I'd had the thought of really getting specific here. It adds quite a lot of language. It doesn't sound, and some of that stuff is existing. Some of them are, so I don't know that. I think I'd like to have others weigh in on whether this is sufficient. I mean, Mr. Gruskin obviously wanted us to talk more about competitive. This seems like the time and place to do that at least.
Yeah, and I'm fine putting it in there. I just think we need to make sure that people don't think that definition applies in the other initiative.
I would just note that these are two new definitions. Even community of interest doesn't have a specific judicial gloss so much as it is about ways of developing some sort of affinity. But it's really, in the United States Supreme Court case law and the Colorado Supreme Court case law, it's never really been defined. This would be the first definition maybe in the country.
Right. And you know, on the competitiveness, I see that more. I think on the, community of interest. Well, I don't think it's exactly defined. It's.
I tried to shorten and use the last phrase.
Right. It's right. Okay. No, I mean the competitive is defined. The other piece is. Not exact. The community of interest is okay. There it is. There's no reason. My concern a little bit is when I look at the actual clause you've used on the community of interest side, to me it doesn't really give actual notice to anybody of anything, because it's to prioritize policy concerns are likely to require congressional representation. And I know you've got more in there, although it then has an inclusion clause, which kind of means anything. So I don't know that adding that additional language versus just saying, you know, like something like prioritizing community of interest adds anything. Because to me, reading that definition of community of interest doesn't really, it still doesn't make it clear to my mind, at least, what requires congressional representation, because it seems like it's sort of, well, anything that people in a given area have a common interest in.
Well, but see, that is so incredibly important, because right now, communities of interest are lumped in with a series of other factors: preserving municipal and county boundaries, compactness, contiguity. It's kind of, maybe you have to consider it, but maybe not. And in this measure, you have to consider it. You have to not only consider it, you have to prioritize it. And that is different than certainly the way, as you know, Mr. Gallander, the state legislative reapportionment is done with specific factors, but it is also provides real clarity to how this process is going to translate into the hearing process, the record development process, and the judicial review process.
So, and just to be very clear, so I understand, make sure I understand subsection 7 right, you've basically got three tiers of priority, right? The first one is the equal population, federal constitutional compliance. Second one is community of interests. And then third is essentially all the other things that you were talking about.
Correct. That's correct. Okay.
Just want to make sure I was reading it right.
So how do you think in your language is your nod to that section, is that where you say in establishing district boundaries to prioritize policy concerns? Is that what you're, without using communities of interest,
right,
you're calling it policy concern?
Actually, it's interesting when you do a case law research on communities of interest, it gets used differently in different kinds of legal situations. And so my concern was using community of interest is going to mean something differently depending upon what your orientation is. And other than the people in this room and probably, you know, a few hundred other people, my guess is communities of interest in the redistricting context doesn't have a specific meaning. And honestly, even to the courts, it doesn't have a specified meaning, which is why we're filling in that gap.
Does it make sense to say something like, I mean, I understand why you then want to use prioritized policy concerns. And maybe, I don't know if concerns are, because people have very different opinions on any given concern, but something like to prioritize, I don't know if concerns are like policy areas is the right word, but something like that are generally shared throughout a district or something like that.
I simply tried to stay faithful to the language and the measure,
right,
but I think that your slight elaboration of what is intended by concerns is right on target. So.
Okay.
Well, what if we put something more like to prioritize, and I don't know how you would introduce it, but drawing districts with shared public policy concerns. I'm just not sure that this, to require congressional representation and to, what does to require congressional representation mean to an average voter? I mean, it still doesn't tell them that this community is going to have shared concerns. Or what about just adding community of, prioritizing community of interest to be defined as, and then do the same thing on the adding competitiveness, which is defined in this initiative as. I mean, what if we just said both those things as defined in this initiative as? I mean, would that at least draw the fact that these are different? I mean, I don't want to get too wordy, but
right,
those are really the two big changes you've made. Everything else is sort of...
Agreed.
Not huge, but those two are big,
okay,
and those two are different.
And I mean, if the board's got language that doesn't materially add to the length of the title that meets that concern, we wouldn't have any objection whatsoever. And just so you know, the issue here really is, at least having been through this a couple of times in the courts, the proponents of maps say there is this commonality. The regional chamber of commerce addresses this entire area, but then it never gets translated into what does that mean in terms of congressional policymaking. So that's why this is defined. All of those happenstance common points of connection aren't enough unless it means something in terms of congressional policymaking. So anything that reflects that, I think, is we wouldn't have any objection to at the start.
So just to throw it out there for discussion, what's your reaction to something like, and this isn't well-worded at all, but prioritizing groups with shared public policy concerns?
Is it groups or is it issues?
Well, it's people, basically. I mean, you're grouping the people.
Okay, I see.
But I mean, we introduce it with in establishing district boundaries to prioritize, and then we could say shared public policy concerns. I mean, the language you use. It says requiring the commission in establishing district boundaries to prioritize, and instead of policy concerns likely to require, we would just say shared public policy concerns. That's right out of your initiative.
Yeah, I mean, if you don't want to use congressional representation, you know, maybe it's shared public policy concerns at the federal level or shared federal public policy.
I am concerned about that language to require congressional representation. I, you know, for the average voter thinking, you know, I'm just not sure how understandable that would be.
I hear that. And if there's another way, whether it was Ms. Steyer's language or my tweak on it, I think we're fine with that.
Yeah. I think shared federal public policy concerns would be, I mean, at least then we're telling voters that we're not using communities of interest, but we're saying this is what we're going to require prioritization.
So would that go after the clause Stephen's on right now?
Yeah, so what Mr. Gruskin had was requiring the commission in establishing districts' boundaries. And then we would say to prioritize shared federal public policy concerns. And then after that, he has including whether districts, but then we would go ahead and use that clause, but then we would say which is defined in this initiative to mean districts that aren't undrawn, blah, blah, blah.
Well, I think the whether districts are competitive
isn't part of the shared federal public policy concerns.
No, it's a new clause.
Or you could put it after the establishing factors for the commission to use clause.
Yeah, that's fine too. We could just say including. We could just move it.
Okay.
So I had a little trouble following.
So just move
one whole clause here now. Okay. Are we putting a semicolon after concerns where the cursor is?
No, because we're going to move including all the way down to the end till after establishing factors. So just cut that including down to the end and then paste it after establishing factors.
Do we need for the following decade?
I put it in only because it's in the definition, but I leave that to the discretion of the board as to whether or not.
Yeah, I know.
I mean, since redistricting is a decade-long process only, maybe surplusage.
Yeah. I don't know that we need it.
I'm also a little uncomfortable with guarantee. I mean, I know that might be the goal, but nothing's guaranteed, no matter how much they gerrymander one.
Right.
Well, I think it's saying that it's not, I mean, the guaranteeing is what it's trying to avoid.
Right.
Well, no, but we could just say protecting an incumbent legislator or a political party.
Right, exactly. Yeah.
And take out guaranteeing or control.
Maybe leave party.
Oh. Take out for the following decade.
Are any of the factors now, besides the competitiveness, things that aren't essentially existing law on the list in like the third tier?
No.
Because I'm trying to figure out if we can compress the clause for brevity and say something like requiring the commission, either in establishing this or just when drawing districts, take your pick, to prioritize shared federal public policy concerns and competitiveness so that districts are not drawn for the purpose of protecting an incumbent legislator or a political party or something like that.
I'd like if we can combine those two. Yeah.
Well, what if we set establishing factors for the commission to use and then put prioritizing shared rather than saying it twice? What about using that language, establishing factors? I mean, I'd hate for people to think those are now the only two factors. So if we said establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts, and then, comma, prioritizing shared federal public policy concerns and adding competitive, or something like that.
So I think you say something like just including prioritization of shared federal public policy concerns.
Right, after establishing.
And competitiveness.
Right.
I think that my concern with the language as it is, which this change appears to address, is that obviously the prioritization of communities of interest is a factor to be considered. So it seems to be more appropriately placed in the way that you're talking about it.
And
you can take out 9 and 10, the red there.
Could I just suggest that because prioritization only applies to communities of interest, you might need after and before whether considering or consideration of whether districts will be considered competitive.
So, where do you want to?
Right where,
okay.
right where my Vulcan mind meld has placed it, just so that it's clear that they are on different tiers.
Right. I mean, we could say also in adding competitiveness, which is what they said in the other one, and then we could say which in this initiative means.
I leave it to the board, I think.
I mean, it's shorter.
I think you've encapsulated what this measure does, because at least in the case law, competitiveness is already in the redistricting mix.
Okay. Well, we can, if you like it the way it is, I'm fine with it.
Okay.
What are your thoughts on the open meeting? Do you not need it in there?
I don't see it as being.
Okay. I mean, it's up to you. I just don't want, you know, the messaging to be, or people to believe that you're not requiring it. But if you're fine with it, I'm fine with it. And what about the lobbying?
Lobbying, I think, is much more important than open meetings, because the concerns in this environment are who's trying to leverage the process. And this measure, you'll know. You'll know.
Well, you'll know if they're being paid to do it.
You'll know if they're being paid to do it, right. Right.
How about the multiple hearings in each district? I noticed you had that in your draft. Is that a potential or key part of the?
I don't remember that. I think the. I don't think 69 really addressed that issue. And, you know, to Ms. Steyer's point, if it suggests that there's statewide hearings in one and not the other, we don't want to create a source of challenge on this. So I don't think that's critical. The important piece, though, is authorizing any Colorado resident to propose maps or present comments to the commission, because that is different.
Yeah, that is. And that's. I don't know whether that's central to the voters. I mean, it's certainly going to be something that is heavily debated, I think, maybe messaged. So I think we should probably leave it in so that discussion can be had if they both appear on the ballot. And I think maybe we should leave in the lobby part, too. What do you all think?
So how about of our last phrase, what of that, or our second to last phrase, I guess?
What the?
Developing procedures.
Yeah, I was wondering if that was even needed to be in there. It doesn't really tell anybody anything.
Which part?
The whole thing.
Developing procedures to be followed by the commission. I would just say, I think, let's see if I can find it. Something like generally requiring the agreement of at least 8 of 12 commissioners to approve a redistricting map, but giving the 4 unaffiliated commissioners the power to reject any map. Part of the reject thing, for the record, is just because veto is actually a specific constitutional thing by the governor, and even though the initiative uses, I think, reject, accomplishes the same thing.
We think that's a appropriate change.
Okay.
And I'm thinking as I'm talking, it's dangerous, but does reject any map, it really is reject any map that's been approved by the other 8, but I suppose it's that, I think your language is fine. I think your language is fine.
Okay. And we talked about, I think, the thought that the judicial review might be kind of assumed and not something that's needed.
Yeah, I mean, the only problem is we're changing some of it, so sometimes when we make changes and we don't want to get too specific, we just talk about establishing so that people know to go read the...
I might be do it a little short of one, just say something like, in providing for judicial review of redistricting maps.
Fine.
At least it saves a few words.
Mm-hmm. So the measure does say, does talk about vetoed, the map's approval could be vetoed by the commissioner. So that was in the
measure. I know it is, but
is there a reason why the word generally?
Probably it was just saying that and maybe the but does it alone, you don't need it. I think the thought was generally giving notice, but there's an exception coming. I don't feel strongly about it at all, but that was the thought process.
And I think the...
Although in fairness, I guess it always requires the agreement, so you're right there. It just means that sometimes it's not enough, so maybe it isn't appropriate. Because, I mean, I guess what we're really saying is that generally we require 8, but sometimes we require 9, depending on who the 4 are.
Right. No, it could be 8. It just has to be one of the unaffiliated who breaks up the 4.
Right, as I said, depending on who the 4 are.
Oh, right,
so it takes
right,
9 if
right, right,
the 3 are...
So do we want to say in there, allowing any Colorado resident to propose maps or present comments?
I think we should.
Seems like that may go before that.
Yeah, I think we should put it before judicial review.
How about before the approval, the 8 of 12 approval?
Yeah, that sounds right, since they would be doing it before the in time.
Is that from this? Oh, look, never mind.
So
So where do you want that clause?
So before, so just move it up one clause.
So that sequentially they're happening. People are commenting before they approve.
I don't have a strong feeling on the lobbyist provision, whether that needs to be called out in the title.
So if I remembered opponent's counsel's argument earlier, your preference is to have it included in the title. The feeling was that it is a pretty central point that people care about, because right now it can essentially be too late.
Right.
Reporting can be too late to be of much use to anyone in the political process, and this considerably shortens it up.
Right. And, you know, number 69 provides for lobbyist reporting, but exactly along the lines that you've laid out, Mr. Gallander, which is it will happen along along the timeline that exists in current law rather than a change in current law.
So if we were to add that, I'd prefer to shorten it down a little bit from Mr. Gruskin's draft if we could. Could we just say mandating public disclosure within 72 hours of any compensation paid to lobby the commission?
Well, the issue is that's not quite accurate, right? Because it's the earlier of when they did the lobbying and when they got paid for it, which is the point. Am I correct in that?
Right. It's who's paying them. But maybe if your goal is to shorten it, mandating public disclosure within 72 hours of lobbyists compensated to...
Well, this, your draft, I don't think it says within 72 hours of what, right? It's just within 72 hours.
Right.
And it's the compensation that needs to be disclosed.
It's the compensation and the principal.
Right.
So...
I was thinking of just cutting it off after paid to lobby the commission.
How about mandating public disclosure within 72 hours of paid lobbyists?
But by 100, I guess.
Because then they're going to have to, you'd have to project a little bit of what they're going to be disclosing, but they're disclosing exactly what they have to disclose under current law, which is how much they got paid and who paid them.
Yeah, well, we could just say mandating public disclosure within 72 hours of paid lobbying.
Paid lobbying?
Yeah.
That's what I wanted to understand. So this is the requirement. There's nothing new. It's just accelerated.
Well, it's
reporting. They're not reporting anything they don't have to eventually report now. Is that...
Well, they don't have to report anything now.
They don't have to report anything now. Okay.
So it's imposing the responsibility. Honestly, it's accelerating the responsibility, and it's giving the Secretary of State's office the opportunity to have a compliance mechanism with complaints for failure. So
let's put that in there.
Next to billboards. but I think that the phrase that you've got is. Highlights the key issues without getting into details.
Should it say paid lobbying of the commission?
I was thinking about both that and on line 11, allowing any Colorado resident to present, propose maps or present comments. I think you have to say to the commission, because the next phrase talks about the Supreme Court.
Oh, right. Okay.
So I think both of those references don't add much, except a lot of clarity. So I would say that they would both help. Well, lobbying also applies to commission staff.
So it should be something like paid lobbying.
Are they on the commission? Well, I mean, that's still the commission. We didn't say of the commissioners, right?
Could it?
Right, right.
We said commission.
Could it say something like of paid lobbying, you know, related to the redistricting process? No, I'm dead serious.
Yeah. What else are you lobbying them on?
What's that?
What else are you lobbying them on?
Well, I mean, because
that's what the commission does.
Right. So,
advocating to the commission, commissioners or staff. Okay, so that's what it is. Okay. And the only other thing is a really annoying technical thing, which is that by the terms of the measure, it's not the public disclosure is actually within 96 hours, because that's when you guys put on the website. They have 72 to report, and then you have another 24 to post it.
Yeah, but they have to disclose it. Oh, well. I don't know if we want to get that technical.
You could take out the word public, requiring disclosure within 72 hours. Because once it's in the hands of the Secretary of State.
Right.
Because, you know, technology might. Maybe we'll have real time by then.
Maybe we'll use Tracer.
Maybe
we'll be using
Tracer. Okay. I'll withhold any other comments until you all have comfortable with the language that's up there, or alternative language.
Okay, are there any other clauses we think we're missing, or we have everything?
Can we have it all?
I do think we can still wordsmith just a little bit on the prioritization and competitive thing. And my thought was, instead of saying consideration of whether districts will be competitive, shorten it to something like consideration of competitiveness so that districts are not drawn to protect any incumbent legislator or political party. It doesn't quite have that clear notice for this initiative, but I think I'm not as concerned about the interpretation of competitiveness being applied to the other one as you are, as much as I like a little more brevity. I don't know that I've seen many, you know, Baltals that sort of specifically reference the initiative we're talking about.
Yeah, I mean, I think the problem is that it just makes it sound like competitiveness is defined that way. Like, just blanket. That's what competitiveness means.
Okay, well, in this one,
so I think we either don't use the word so that people don't get confused, or we use the word and say that defined to mean or something.
Could we just say meaning that? Consideration of competitiveness, meaning that districts?
Meaning that.
But if we don't say defined to mean, it just makes it sound like that's what competitiveness means.
Yeah.
we're letting you know, voters, that's what competitiveness means. And when you read the other ones, what
defined
it means
to mean.
They,
consideration of competitiveness defined to mean.
I think that's fine, maybe. I don't know.
I don't know if it ended up any shorter.
No. Well, I think we can, and I think we can take out the for the purpose of protecting and just say to protect, or you could even say districts do not protect.
That might be going a little too far, but.
Well,
I think the purpose is,
the purpose is written in there. And while I think to protect has the same meaning, I mean, it talks about the objectives behind the map drawing rather than anything else, because that's all the commission can control at that point.
I mean, to protect, I mean, there are times that it just will protect because the entire community is red or blue or whatever. It's whether you're doing it with the intended.
I think, Stephen, leave it.
Yeah.
At least for now, what we discuss.
The other advantage using that language is you do use for the purpose of, or not for the purpose of advantaging or disadvantaging any person or party in the other ballot title. So this actually has a similarity, but it sets off the different language. So it actually, it's, to the extent title setting is elegant, this actually gets you, I think, what your goal is.
One, here's, it's probably a couple more. So, so the defined, I mean, can we just say competitiveness, comma, defined in the measure, comma, so that district, competitiveness as defined in the measure, so that districts are not drawn.
Do people know what the measure means? It's defined.
Okay, as defined in this amendment?
Yeah, that's fine. I don't know what people, if people know what amendment.
Well, we said it's an amendment right up top.
Yeah.
So. It's comma after amendment. With that, I think I'm happy, believe it or not.
Wow. It's happy. What do you think, Mr. Chris?
So, I'm dehydrated, so anything could come out. But actually, I think the language that you've got is good. What I would change is the placement of lines 7, 8, 9, and part of 10, because right now it's between two things about the commission, how it's composed and how it makes its decisions. And it seems to me that the factors actually are the most central element of this measure. And so I'd put that in front of
specifying
on line three. Yes, yeah,
I see that, but line seven also starts by talking about factors for the commission to use. And so it made sense in my mind to talk about putting, you know, the creation of a commission before you talk about factors that they're going to use.
Yeah, I just kind of liked how it flowed in terms of timeline. I mean, from the voter perspective, we have a commission, and here's what the commission's going to do, and here's what the court's going to do, and I don't know. It just seemed like from a...
If there's a motion for rehearing, I may
yeah.
ask you to accommodate in an easy way their concerns, because I think what's important to voters is what districts ultimately look like, and that the process was a legitimate one. And
yeah, but I think part of that is also the composition of who's deciding.
I agree. And I just see an easy way of allowing voters to take a look at two ballot questions and say they're different is to take those other clauses that stand out.
Leaving that aside, I do sort of think that, I mean, in the first clause after the in connection therewith, we've got the establishment of the commission. So we've said we've created it. We said what it's supposed to do. I kind of like the idea of saying how it's going to do it first, then we can say who they are. I actually agree with Mr. Gruskin on this point.
Yeah, I mean, I know that one measure shouldn't be tied to another measure, but I guess I just don't like, I mean, yeah, it'll show that they're different, but it won't.
To me,
maybe for the wrong reasons.
To me, it's not a matter of showing that it's different. I'm not overly concerned about, I'm concerned less about that than having sort of the clearest, best notice of what it's doing, you know, as our standard procedure, as if there was no other initiative. And I just feel like we've got here, the first clause right there is, this is what this thing's going to do. It's going to divide the state into congressional districts. Here's what it's going to have to think about when it does it. And then we can get to the other stuff, which is, frankly, more details about kind of who's on it and the process. Otherwise, I mean, I don't feel really strongly about it. I think we're sort of fine either way, but given the proponent's preference and it's their initiative, and that I personally think as a voter, I'd want to see that first up higher, I would move it.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't feel super strongly either. I'm just thinking in kind of sequentially, you know, in my mind, what happens is the commission is established, then it starts to use the factors, maps are proposed, they approve it, and then you have judicial review at the end. But.
All right. Should I move it in? We can vote on it and get it.
Yeah.
All right.
If you want.
Yeah, why not? I'll move that we move the clause starting on line 7 with the words establishing factors and ending on line 10 with the word party up to be the second clause after in connection therewith, starting after commission on line 3.
Well, you can just do it. You don't have to move it. I mean, you can just.
Well, I mean, it was a way to just.
I'm not
going to
vote no. So.
Oh, I thought you might. I don't know. That's why I made the vote. Did it that way.
And you can just move it, and then we'll move the whole question.
Okay.
I liked it better the other way, but I'm fine with this.
I made a motion to be rejected.
Well, I don't know. We can just move it back.
I don't feel strongly enough about it.
We just don't generally make motions. To, you know,
well, I just felt there was disagreement, so that was the way to resolve it. But, you know, if I just get to win, despite the two of you not agreeing, then
you'll
that's
take
fine.
It. All right. On line 11, can we, instead of saying requiring the agreement of at least 8 of 12, can we just say requiring at least 8 of 12 commissioners to approve?
Yes.
Redistricting that?
We'll give you that, because you just gave up on the other one. Now, and I mean, the reason that I'm okay with it is that, I mean, I'd like to hear at the rehearing, but I think, in fact, the makeup of the commission may have been more important to the other proponents than the criteria, and it seems the criteria is more important to Mr. Gruskin than the makeup of the commission. So, you know, we can hear from them and see what they have to say. If reversing them is sending a bad message, then we can take it up next time.
Okay.
It's the same makeup, though, right?
It's the same makeup, but in the
other... No, the other one, could it be a minor political party?
Yeah, it's not exactly the same makeup, but I also think that the... I mean, in speaking to them, it seemed their biggest issue was the makeup of the commission.
Right.
And how that was drawing everything to a partisan. Right. Anything else, or should I read it?
I think you read it.
All right. So this is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning congressional redistricting and in connection therewith establishing a Citizens Commission and transferring the state legislature's responsibility to divide the state into congressional districts to the commission. Establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts, including prioritization of shared federal public policy concerns and consideration of competitiveness as defined in this amendment to mean that districts are not drawn for the purpose of protecting an incumbent legislator or a political party. Specifying the qualifications and methods of appointment for the 12 commissioners, four of whom must be registered with the state's largest political party, four of whom must be registered with the state's second largest political party, and four of whom must not be registered with any political party. Allowing any Colorado resident to propose maps or present comments to the commission, requiring at least eight of the 12 commissioners to approve a redistricting map, but giving the four unaffiliated commissioners the power to reject any map. Mandating disclosure within 72 hours of paid lobbying of the commission and providing for judicial review of redistricting maps.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's good.
Let's take lunch.
Yeah, it's elegant. Okay. Want to make a motion?
Yes. I move that the board set the title for proposed initiative 2017-18, number 95, congressional redistricting, as was just read into the record.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. So that takes us to initiative 2017-2018, number 96. And Mr. Gruskin.
Good morning. Title Board members, my name is Mark Gruskin. I'm appearing here on behalf of the proponents, and I'll ask them to introduce themselves. They've already executed their affidavits.
I'm Robert Duray.
And for the record, Carla Castedo.
All right, do you want to start out just telling us what you believe the single subject of this measure is?
Yes, Madam Chair. This is about creating accountability around the State Legislative Reapportionment Commission, Colorado.
All right. Any questions from the board on single subject?
I'll just very briefly say, as we had fairly extended discussion on 95, just for the record, it's a bit of the same concern about the use of the chief judge of the Colorado Court of Appeals as a selector of commissioners. The other concerns raised in 95 are not concerns in this measure, but that at least, you know, pending the possibility of rehearing, changing my mind, I'm okay with it for now and would move that we find that proposed initiative 2017-18, number 96, legislative reapportionment has a single subject, and then we have jurisdiction to set a title.
Was anyone signed up to speak on this one?
I didn't put out sign-up sheets, but okay. I don't see anyone who doesn't look familiar, so
okay. I'm going with second.
That. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. All right. And you have any comment, Mr. Gruskin, on whether this is merely a repeal?
Madam Chair, this is not a mere repeal. It would require 55% of the electorate, and we would ask the title board to so find.
All right. I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative 2017-18, number 96, legislative reapportionment, is not a mere repeal and adds language to the Colorado Constitution, and therefore requires a 55% vote.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. All right. Do you have a handout for us?
I do.
So surprising.
I would ask that this three-page document be included in the board's official record of this hearing. This document parallels the document that we provided you in connection with initiative number 95, the first page showing the similarities between the title for initiative 67 and, for all practical purposes, initiative 68 and the staff draft. Hence our red line version and our clean version, which are pages 2 and 3 of the handout. I would simply say that the single subject description has been changed. that the various other changes that you considered in connection with number 95 are shown here, except that rather than use a fraction or a number, we simply said that the commission would be composed of an equal number of voters who are registered with no political party, state largest political party, and the second largest political party. So, and then we say that it's a 12-member commission. So if the board wants to go back to using four, that's fine. But because both 67 and 68 are constitutional amendments, as is this one, we think that there might be value to having some accurate but different language in the single subject statement.
Do you think we can go back to using 95?
I think you can use 95, obviously with the exception of the single subject statement, in every regard except Mr. Gellender's use of generally.
We took it out.
We took it out, but it applies here because if there is a deadlock and it goes to the Supreme Court, there is a process whereby there can be a majority approval subject to the veto power of the foreign affiliated members. Mm. So
you're just being prescient.
Exactly.
So, yes, I think you can use 95 with that one change and an appropriate single subject statement for 96.
Can I ask you a couple or a preliminary question? In the Legislative Council memo, under their substantive comments and questions, number three, they talk about use of the term nonpartisan in here. And whether it's accurate to call the commission nonpartisan, as the measure does, when eight members are required to be members of specified political parties. Just out of curiosity, do you have any thoughts or reaction to that?
Two thoughts. First of all, I found other definitions that indicate that nonpartisan means not adhering to a particular party position, which I think is accurate here. And because the commission is balanced, the nonpartisan, the nonpartisan is used as an adjective here, and it reflects a lack of a commitment to a particular political party point of view. So I think, while I expressed, I think, interest in the question number three as I did further research on it, I realized that, in fact, that definition is not necessarily accurate, and it doesn't change the fact that the commission as a whole is nonpartisan.
But you're not proposing that we use nonpartisan in the title,
no.
It looks like. Okay.
No.
And then just one other in the category of miscellaneous, there's a definition of qualified appellant,
mm-hmm.
but I don't see that term used in the measure. I think that there's a different kind of judicial review track in this one,
right?
Than in 95. I just wasn't. Is that just carryover, or am I missing a?
No, I think you're not missing anything.
Okay, yeah, not a big deal. I just noticed that. Thank you. Those were my only two non-wordsmithing questions. So I think before I derailed this a little bit, we were talking about use of the term generally, maybe adding that back in on line 10.
And if I may, I misstated when I said there were no changes between 95 and 96. I think on line 4 where it says shared federal public policy issues, we'll want to make that state.
Have anything else, Mr. Griffin? Anything? Anything from the board?
I just want to make sure. Where is the provision about any Colorado resident providing maps or comments? I'm sure it's here. I'm just not seeing it.
Page 6, 2B, subsection 2, paragraph B.
Thank you.
You bet.
I'm going to read it, and then I can think about it. All right, so this is an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning state legislative redistricting and, in connection therewith, renaming the commission that redraws state legislative boundaries, establishing factors for the commission to use in drawing districts, including prioritization of shared state public policy concerns and consideration of competitiveness as defined in this amendment to mean that districts are not drawn for the purpose of protecting an incumbent legislator or a political party, specifying the qualifications and methods of appointment for the 12 commissioners, four of whom must be registered with the state's largest political party, four of whom must be registered with the state's second largest political party, and four of whom must not be registered with any political party, allowing any Colorado resident to propose maps or present comments to the commission, generally requiring at least 8 of 12 commissioners to approve a redistricting map, but giving the 4 unaffiliated commissioners the power to reject any map, mandating disclosure within 72 hours of paid lobbying of the commission, and providing for judicial review of redistricting maps.
Could I just say, sure. I know this is
absolutely
out of order, but the renaming the commission that redraws the state legislative boundaries, I don't really think the name is a central feature. I mean, yeah. I don't have a problem with the clause, but I think if you struck it, since that language is used in the title for 67, this would be a way of distinguishing the two measures without taking anything away from this title.
Yeah, I don't know that I thought it was central last time. I think the only reason we put it in there was because one creates a commission and one just renames it, and I think they were trying to distinguish.
So we'd take out the language from the clause, and I think after commission on line 3, add back in that redraws state legislative boundaries, so we sort of know what we're talking about since we don't have it up there now.
That would be perfect. That would work for us, let's put it that way.
So now the beginning would read, and I don't need to read the whole thing, but it would be an amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning state legislative redistricting and, in connection therewith, establishing factors for the commission that redraws state legislative boundaries to use in drawing districts. And we struck the renaming.
And do you need in drawing districts there? as you've just said, that it redraws the district, the boundaries?
Strike
to use in drawing districts.
Well, maybe,
oh, yeah,
maybe
in drawing districts, yeah. I don't even know if we need to use establishing factors for the commission. What else are they going to do with them but use them? Get rid of to use. What do you think?
I would have actually kept all of that language in. I know it's a little redundant, but just sometimes I'm that way. I don't feel that strongly about it. But.
I would have kept to use.
Okay.
Okay. Sounds good to me.
Okay.
We done?
Yep.
All right. Thank you very much, members.
Oh, we got to make a motion.
Oh.
I move that we...
can sit down if you want. But.
I move that we set the title for Initiative 2017-18, number 96, Legislative Reapportionment, as it, we've adopted some changes, and it now appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
All right. We are going to take a break to switch out, and do you want to grab a lunch or something?
I'm fine.
Okay. Then we're just going to take a break to switch out.
Okay. We are back on. The time is 12:13, and on the agenda we are at proposed initiative number 20, or proposed initiative 27-2018, number 98. Looks like the proponents are present. Will you please introduce yourself?
Troy, can I just one?
Yep.
Would you like to introduce the board members currently sitting for the record?
Yes. We have had a change in the title board. I'm Troy Bratton, designee for the Colorado Secretary of State, switching out for Suzanne Steyer, and Julie Pellegrin is here, switching out for Jason Gellender for the Office of Legislative Legal Services, and Glenn remains from the Attorney General's Office. Thanks, Steve. And proponents want to identify themselves?
Donald Anderson, proponent.
Martha Olson, proponent.
Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chair. Ed Ramey, counsel for the proponents, and I would like to say that both I as counsel and both of the proponents just introduced themselves are the proponents for all 10 measures which are immediately coming up, 98 through 107.
Okay, thanks. We'll just go ahead and incorporate those into the record instead of doing the identification each time. So the staff draft is displayed on the board. Are there? Do you have anything you want to say about the single subject nature?
Well, Mr. Chair, we're looking at number 98 right now, which I will note for the record follows largely a template of a measure that has already received title number 73. There have been some minor changes in the measure, actually not that minor, but at least in terms of volume of words, fairly minor. With regard to this measure, they are accurately reflected in this title. And unless one of the proponents feels otherwise, I think, particularly given the discussions that we had in the template with the title that came up with number 73, that 98 looks pretty good to us. I would also say before we get too deep into the title, we do have the question of, are we proposing a 55% vote? Or
right.
So
let's do the single subject first, and then we'll do the repeal or amendment constitutional issue. Does anybody, and then we'll get into the title, does anybody, any board member have any questions about the single subject nature? Okay. Motion? Yep.
I move that we find that proposed initiative number 2017-2018, number 98, is a single subject and the title board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. And then, Mr. Ramey, do you have any comments about whether this simply repeals a constitution or adds language? Or?
It does not simply repeal. It affirmatively amends it. So okay. It would be, in our view, a 55% vote.
Okay. Any comments or questions from board members? Motion?
I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-2018, number 98, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 1-4B of Article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously. And now we can get into the staff draft. Mr. Ramey, you said you're okay with the staff draft, or do you have any changes? Or?
No, the changes that occurred between the text of Measure 73 and Measure 98, which we're looking at right now, are accurately reflected in this title. Otherwise, the title largely tracks the template that we spent considerable time on back then. So it's acceptable to the proponents.
Okay, thank you. Any board member have any changes?
I have a couple of proposals. When we set initiatives on the funding measures a couple of weeks ago, or set titles, we replaced generally the word secondary with high school, just for voter clarification. So I would propose that on line 2, it would be early childhood through high school public education. And then again on line 4, and actually instead of primary and high, we go through early childhood through high school education again, so that we don't run into the problem of losing the middle schools.
We did make those changes with regard to separate measures subsequent to 73 funding measures, and they would be acceptable to the proponents.
Can we take out the come after childhood? Also then on the, when it comes to describing the percentage of state and local personal income, I would propose that we say what it's starting at, so that instead of it's, let's see, I'm sorry, I'm tracking from what I've written to what's on the screen. State and local, starting where it says that increases over time. Actually, no, before that, I'm sorry. Statewide funding for school districts at, instead of a percentage of, to say at a level equal to at least 3.67%. And then instead of that increases over time, I think you can just put a comma after income, personal income, increasing to at least 4%. And then I don't think we need to repeat of state and local personal income. And instead of by, say 4. And take out 4 before later years. So we'll just include and later years. Is that good?
That looks good to me. Do you have any comments on those, Mr.
That would be fine with the proponents.
That's all I had.
Okay. You want to move them?
I would move the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That's unanimous. Any other comments or changes?
I don't have any.
I'm fine.
Okay. I'll go ahead and read that in. An amendment to the Colorado Constitution concerning early childhood through high school public education and, in connection therewith, declaring that every Colorado resident should have an opportunity to receive an adequate early childhood through high school education on an equitable basis throughout the state, requiring the legislature to maintain statewide funding for school districts at a level equal to at least 3.67% of state and local personal income, increasing to at least 4% for the 2021 through 2022 fiscal year and later years, permitting the legislature to enact and school districts to implement laws without regard to constitutional requirements related to revenue and spending limitations and property taxation, as necessary to ensure that adequate state and local resources are available to fund public schools statewide and within each school district, and requiring the legislature to report every 5 years concerning the goals stated in the amendment.
I did have one other little tweak I just noticed as you read. On line 8, take out the comma after spending limitations.
Should I reread for a comma?
No, I don't think you need to. You didn't read the comma in the first place. So
you paused briefly.
I know, I did. It kind of snagged me there. Okay.
I move title board accept the title for proposed initiative 1718, number 98, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
That's unanimous. That takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 99. Same proponents as the last measure, and same representative, Mr. Ramey, still present. Any questions by the board on the measure, or anything you'd like to state, Mr. Ramey?
No. I would request the board to make a finding of single subject. Again, this tracks measures that have been here earlier where a single subject was found, and also the issue that this does, in part, affirmatively amend, not simply repeal or strike out a measure of the Constitution, so it would require a 55% vote before proceeding to the title.
Any comments or questions from the board on single subject nature?
Not for me.
So I don't think this will go to single subject, but the seems like one of the primary changes in this set is this fully fund reductions language.
The negative factor
added in there. In the, you know, it would amend the statute 2255-109-03. BB2. Mm-hmm. Could you just give a brief description of what that added provision would be doing?
Certainly. The point of it, the statutory piece 3B and the provisions under that are to establish interim uses of the money until such time as is reflected in the title, the legislature adopts a sort of a redo of the Public School Finance Act, which in which case then those provisions would replace it. So we're designating some uses of the funding that we are creating on an interim basis. One of those designated uses is to sort of backfill or eliminate the negative factor. And I would emphasize this is not repealing the negative, or I guess it's now the budget stabilization factor. I should not refer to it as negative factor anymore, but it does not repeal or in any way affect the existence of the budget stabilization factor. But one of the uses that we are designating, for which we are designating our funding, is to fund and fill the amount of any budget stabilization factor deficit that may otherwise be recognized.
Okay, thank you.
It's simply a designation of use of the money on an interim basis that we're generating.
Thank you.
I'm good.
All right, ready for a motion?
I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 99, is a single subject, and we have jurisdiction to set the title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. That's unanimous. Another of your
nice motions?
Yeah.
I move the title board finds that the proposed initiative 2017-18, number 99, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Okay, we can move to the text of the measure. Mr. Ramey, did you have any comments or changes to the staff draft?
I do, Mr. Chair. Fairly minor. First off, you already have inserted, I see the taxes shall be increased by amount, and that looks accurate. Take us down on this measure to line 19, where there is, I believe, a typo, and at least on my draft.
Yeah, it's now at the end of the line.
Where'd
so
it go?
With the addition of the dollar amount, it pushed it to the end of the line.
Oh, yeah.
That's why the typo existed then. Right. To eliminate the hyphen, where the hyphen is now,
hyphen
works.
And support.
Yeah.
There we go.
Here we go.
Any?
I think it's the only one you didn't get.
Any comments or changes from the board?
I have one little technical possibility that, I mean, this goes back to some of the stuff we did last time. On line 10, we have it as plural voter-approved revenue changes, which I think technically there's only, since it's being approved in one election, I mean, and I think it reads better to think spent as a voter-approved revenue change, if you're comfortable with that. And then I think last time when we were setting, the titles for the initiatives, they're substantially similar to this one. We made a conscious decision not to specify what programs the money would be used for prior to enactment of the new school finance law. I'm okay just because I know that this idea that the School Finance Act, the current one, is not fully funded is a very hot issue, and I don't know how much voters will read the language that's in there in terms of requiring the money to be to fully fund the existing public school finance formula without reductions. But it will resonate with some, for sure. So, I mean, I'm all this to say, I'm okay with including that. I would rewrite it a little bit. Instead of until the legislature has enacted, I think we can say enacts, a new public school finance law, and then put it in the active voice again, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula, and then I think we can take out without reductions, because that's what fully fund means. So instead of to be annually appropriated, say requiring, I'm sorry, after requiring the general or the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund. And we can take out the comma, I think, after reductions. That's all I had.
Okay.
That looks okay to me, as long as it's accurate. I'm no expert on the school financing. Is that an accurate description of what that provision would do?
Yeah, I think so. I think it just cleans up the language a little bit.
Mm-hmm. That's the way I read the provision, that the first use is to increase statewide base, second is to fully fund.
Yeah, I'm okay with those changes.
Are they okay?
Yep.
Are you guys okay?
Proponents are okay with those changes, yes.
Yeah.
Unamovable.
You want to read it?
Oh, sure. State taxes shall be increased $1.5 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single-rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $175,000 and increasing to 3.37% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37%, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact regularly review and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
I move that the title board accept the title as for, I'm sorry, for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 99, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. That passes unanimously, which brings us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 100. The proponents and their representative, Mr. Ramey, are still present. Any comments, Mr. Ramey, on the single subject nature of this measure?
The single subject is again the same. Some numbers have changed in the mix, but otherwise the same. I would also note again that we are affirmatively amending the Constitution as a part of this measure.
Okay. Any comments from the title board on the single subject nature or the amendment to the Constitution?
No.
No.
Okay.
I move the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 100, is a single subject, and the title board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous.
I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 100, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of Article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous again. And to the language of the measure. Any comments, Mr. Ramey?
Again, we need to fill in the number in line one, which would be $1.5 billion. And I'm struggling a little bit here with what's logistically the best way to proceed. We've made some changes. We have some templates. We made some changes in the last measure, but there are also some additional items in
right.
here. So I don't know what's most comfortable for Mr. Ward and for the board.
Right, because I would just propose that we make the same changes that we had made in the earlier one, which, of course, will be a pain to get in.
I'm not sure you could just do that by a complete overlay is the only
thing. So, yeah, copying and pasting is not an option here. So what we need to do is try to just track back to where we made changes before, which I had some.
So there's one on line 12, where it's a voter-approved revenue change.
Scroll down. Okay, line 17, change has enacted to enacts. Line 18, after requiring the general or the legislature to annually appropriate. Take out to be annually appropriated. And take out without reductions, including the comma.
Is that all of them?
That's all
I think it was, yeah. Okay. Can we adopt those before I read it again?
I move that we adopt the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
If there aren't any other comments from the board or proponents, I'll go ahead and read it in.
I do have a comment. I think the new language here is the freezing the residential assessment rate at the current rate of 7.2%. I think my, and it's a mild concern, but my concern, I think, is with the term freezing. There just could be a, you know, either showing approval or disapproval of that, you know, a kind of a judgment call on whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, as opposed to just a description of what it does.
Mr. Chair, my concern, obviously, from prior discussions with the board, is I want to avoid catchphrases at all costs, and I'm, and
could be.
I was thinking of other words you could use, such as stabilizing, for example, which may be worse, frankly, in terms of what we want to try to avoid.
Holding?
Setting? Keeping?
I'm not sure that setting necessarily denotes forever and ever.
How about keeping?
That doesn't, I'm not sure that denotes forever and ever either.
Well, maybe it does. Don't have a problem with freezing. I think that's the most accurate word there to show where it is and that it won't move.
Mr. Chair, if I could represent the board, I don't think freezing is a catchphrase. Now, there may be other concerns with its descriptiveness, but I can't think of a better word at this point.
I think I'm in agreement. Pretty neutral. I don't see it as a catchphrase, and I'm struggling to come up with a synonym that. Locking?
I mean, the only thing I can think is a lot more wordy. I mean, like, establishing without being subject to future change or, it's not elegant.
Maintaining?
I guess you could say maintaining for future years.
I like freezing, I think.
Even though freezing sounds somewhat colloquial, it's also one of those things that when a voter reads it, they'll know what it means. So I'm comfortable with it as well.
Well, given that I can't think of a better way of describing it, I mean, it's not a term used in the measure, and it's my worry would be that it's seen as some sort of, and frankly, I'm not sure whether it's would be pejorative or.
Well, I mean, how do you feel about locking? Because I mean, that's a term that's frequently used when you talk about rates, maybe not in tax purposes, but. Locking percentages, locking rates. Not any better?
I think I'd have the same concern with locking.
Okay.
I'm struggling too, and I tend to like freezing, and I was having the same reaction. If anybody could argue it's has any catchphrase aspect to it, it's negative toward us. Freezing is generally not a, you know, a positive thing. But here, I guess I also agree that it. Everybody knows what it means.
Yeah, I can't think of a better one, so I'm okay with this.
Okay.
Okay, I'll read this in. State taxes shall be increased $1.5 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $175,000 and increasing to 3.37% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate from 1.37%, freezing the residential assessment rate at the current rate of 7.2% for school district property taxes, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund, and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
One correction on line 8. I think you read corporate income tax rate from 1.37% should be by, and corporate income tax rate by 1.37%.
Okay. Yes, if I did that, from to by on line 8.
I move that the title board accept the title for proposed initiative number 2017-2018, number 100, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous, which takes us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 101. The proponents are still present. Is it safe to assume you have the same comments on single subject and amending the Constitution?
Yes,
Mr. Chair.
I move that Title Board finds a proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 101, is a single subject, and the Title Board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. It's unanimous.
I move that the Title Board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-2018, number 101, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the State Constitution for purposes of Section 14B of Article 5 of the State Constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Unanimous again. Changes to the text?
Same ones as before. So.
So on line 12.
Yeah.
At the end there, spent as a voter approved.
And then on line 18, change has enacted to an X. After requiring the legislature to annually appropriate, strike to be annually appropriated. Strike without reductions along with the comma. I move that we accept the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Any additional comments or questions from the proponents or board members before I read it in?
Not from the proponents.
Does anybody else want to read it in?
I guess.
By the way, it's very helpful to have you read it so we can see that we haven't lost something.
And you do it so well.
Okay, here we go. State taxes shall be increased $1.5 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single-rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing home tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $175,000 and increasing to 3.37% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37% for purposes of school district property taxes, reducing the current residential assessment rate of 7.2% to 7.0%, and the current non-residential assessment rate of 29% to 24%, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
When you read through that again, it dawned on me that up there at about line 9, we say reducing the current, but we lost the concept of it having been frozen at that. We don't make it clear that going forward it won't change.
So like reducing the rate 7 point.
One idea, looking back at the way it's phrased in the measure, it says for property tax years beginning on or after 2019, or however it's phrased. Maybe we put that in before reducing on line 9, and that way, if it says it's any property tax year commencing on or after January 1, 2019. So I think that would convey that it's going forward, it's going to always be this. Or maybe we could say for tax years commencing on or after January 1, 2019.
Yep, I like that.
That would work.
Property tax years. Property tax years.
So I'm not clear on.
Right where you are.
So we want to say for.
For property tax years commencing on or after January 1, 2019.
January 1st.
January 1, 2019, I'm sorry. Comma.
So let me reread just lines 9 and 10.
Actually, start at 8.
Okay, I'll start at 8. I'll read the clause as it starts on line 8. For purposes of school district property taxes, for property tax years commencing on or after January 1, 2019, reducing the current residential assessment rate of 7.2% to 7.0%, and the current non-residential assessment rate of 29% to 24%.
I move that we accept the changes, further changes to the staff draft as they appear on screen.
Second.
Did you have a comment, Mr.?
Nope.
Okay. It's acceptable. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I move that we accept the title as it appears on the screen for number initiative number 2017-18, number 101.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That brings us to proposed initiative 2017-18, number 102.
Before we go there, Mr. Chair?
Yes.
It dawns on me that if we are troubled by the word freezing, this is the way to fix it in the other one, too, to say that for property tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2019, setting the da-da-da-da-da, if we want to go back and reconsider.
We'd have no objection. The proponents have no objection to going back and reconsidering. I'd like to see it on the screen in the context of the language of 101, I guess, is one of 100, I guess, is what we're
It was 100, yeah.
Do you like to go back and?
Let's look at it as okay. If there's no objections.
Okay, so pausing here on the agenda, we'll go back to reconsider proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 100. So give Steve a minute to put that back up.
We're going to make Mr. Ward crazy if we do this very much.
You see number 100 on your screen now.
Hey. So on line 8, we could strike freezing and say for property tax years commencing on or after January 1, 2019, comma, setting. Or establishing.
Or freezing. I don't know about that.
It's longer. It would resolve any concern I would have about the use of the term freezing.
From the proponent's perspective, I'm sort of an equipoise between the two, and that this is a little awkward. We're going to set it commencing on or after, for all property tax years commencing on or after January 1 at 7, let me get the exact language here.
7.2.
We're going to set it at the current rate of 7.2. I mean, it's a little awkward, but it does eliminate the freezing concern.
We could remove the phrase at the current rate. We could just say setting the residential assessment rate at 7.2%. But that loses a little info for the voters that it's not a change as to what it is right now.
In my opinion, I think I just prefer the freezing. I think I prefer the language how it was.
I'm fine either way.
Proponents are leaning toward freezing. It's just because of the awkwardness of that phrase.
Okay.
What is Glenn need? I don't think we needed a further motion at this point because we haven't moved to reconsider.
Okay. Okay, we will leave proposed initiative 2017-2018-100 as it was, and that brings us back on the agenda to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 102. The proponents are present, as well as their representative, Mr. Ramey. Any comments on single subject or amending the Constitution?
No additional comments, Mr. Chair, other than the ones that we've made with regard to the other measures.
Sure. Okay.
I move to find that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 102, is a single subject and that the title board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
I move that the title board finds that the proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 102, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Okay, to the language, I
same changes.
Think we have the same changes on line 10.
So could I ask, Mr. Ramey, is 102 the same as 99 other than the rates
Oh, I knew you were going to do that. I can tell you in just a moment. Yes, I think the answer is yes. 102 is this, wait. Even though the proponents tell me yes, I want to be sure.
And the rates I'm talking about are the ones in
right.
Section 4 of the measure.
Right. 102 is the same as 99 except for the incremental tax rates.
The bracket.
The bracket.
And the bracket, yeah.
Right, and the rates and the brackets to which they apply. Correct. Mm-hmm. Otherwise, it's the same as 99.
Yeah, so, it appears that you have three groups.
Yes.
Right.
What we're seeing going forward, and this may help Mr. Ward, I don't know, this may be the most beneficial piece of this, is that we now have templates for those going forward.
Well, that's what I was wondering, if it'd be easier, Stephen, for you to, and maybe not now that you started making these, but to copy 99 over and just change
the rates.
I guess it would also change the dollar amount in the first line.
And the dollar amount will be changing in the first line, right?
Well, the dollar amount and the rates.
Well, no,
you still have to change.
The overall tax, the $1.5 billion
right.
would change, and then also the dollar amount and the rates. And the.
Right.
So under ordinary circumstances, I would do it that way, although I think that since the changes are so few in the lower section, it might actually be better to start from the staff draft and
fine.
Just move fine. Ahead like we have been doing. If Julie can remind me where the changes are, I've captured voter approved revenue change.
Where you are, put in annually appropriate. Take out to be annually appropriated. Take out without reductions along with the comma. And on line 16, change has enacted to enacts.
Any additional changes or comments from? Oh, I think on line 20 we have the yes. dash in support again.
Dash appears there.
I move we accept the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. State taxes shall be increased $1.6 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change of the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $150,000. And increasing to 3.37% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37%, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund, and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
I move that we adopt the title for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 102, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That brings us on the agenda to propose initiative 27-2018-103.
And I would note that if you copy in 100, the only thing you have to change is 175 to 150. If you copy in the title that we did for number 100.
I'll just note for the record that the proponents are still present, as long as as well as their representative, Mr. Ramey. Not seeing any comments on single subject or amending the Constitution. We're probably ready for a motion.
I move that Title Board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-2018, number 103, is a single subject, and that the Title Board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I move that the Title Board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 103, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the State Constitution for purposes of Section 1-4-B of Article 5 of the State Constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And to the language, which I believe Ms. Pellegrin.
On line 7?
Well, first line 1.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. We got to put in the.
I think it's 1.6.
Mm-hmm. And on line 7, change 175 to 150.
Everything else good? Okay.
So, do I need to? I move that we accept the changes to the staff draft as were made to number 100 and as they appear on screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Aye. State. State taxes shall be increased $1.6 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education, and in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $150,000 and increasing to 3.37% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37%, freezing the residential assessment rate at the current rate of 7.2% for school district property taxes, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund, and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria. Until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
I move that we accept the title or set title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 103.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That brings us on the agenda to propose initiative 2017-2018, number 104. I'll note for the records the proponent and their representative are still present. Any comments from the board or proponents on single subject or constitution?
Same comments, Mr. Chair, to both single subject and the affirmative amendment of the Constitution.
I move that we find that the proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 104, is a single subject and that the title board has jurisdiction to set the title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. It's unanimous.
I move the title board finds that the proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 104, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Do your magic, Steve.
And yeah. I move that we accept the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen and as they were made to number 101.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. State taxes. State taxes shall be increased $1.6 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single-rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $150,000 and increasing to 3.37% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37% for purposes of school district property taxes for property tax years commencing on or after January 1, 2019, reducing the current residential assessment rate of 7.2% to 7.0% and the current non-residential assessment rate of 29% to 24%, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria. Until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
I move that the title board sets the title for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 104, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That brings us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 105. I'll note for the record that proponents are still present, and I don't see any comments on single subject or affirmatively amending the Constitution.
Number 100. I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 105, is a single subject and the title board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I move that the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 105, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Give Mr. Ward a couple minutes to make some changes on the screen.
Dollar amount is 1.9 billion, yeah. And then on line 7, change that to 100. And change 3.37 to 3.87.
Mr. Chair, I'm not sure we're using the right template because this measure,
oh, no, is that 100?
Wrong. We don't have a Gallagher provision, but one's appearing in the...
So this should be...
It should have been 99.
99.
99, I think, would do it.
My fault.
I apologize, Mr. Ward.
It's all right, I got it.
There is no question about that.
All right, this time for sure.
1.9. 3.87. I move that we accept the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen as they were adopted for number 2017-18, number 99.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. State taxes shall be increased $1.9 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $100,000 and increasing to 3.87% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37%, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund, and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
I move that the title board set the title for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 105, as it appears on the screen.
Second. All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Brings us to proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 106. The proponents are present. Seeing no comments on the single subject nature or affirmatively amending the Constitution,
I move that the title board finds proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 106, is a single subject, and the title board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
I move title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 106, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
I move that we accept the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen and as they were made to initiative number 2017-18, number 100.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Mr. Ramey, we're not giving you much chance to comment.
I know, I was just going to say, you're okay with stop us at any time. What we're doing.
No, I think we're okay.
Okay.
I've been following you closely.
My reading is deteriorating, but
you're doing a great job with this.
State taxes shall be increased $1.9 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets, starting at 0.37% for income above $100,000 and increasing to 3.87% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37%, freezing the residential assessment rate at the current rate of 7.2% for school district property taxes, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund, and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria. Until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
Move that the title board set the title for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 106, as it appears on the screen.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And last on the agenda, proposed initiative 2017-2018, number 107.
Can I just clarify? I think this came up last time, but this is a new set of measures. Would the proponent's intention to just be put one of, you know, these nine measures ultimately out for signature and on the ballot?
Yes.
Okay. Thank you.
I'll note for the record that the proponents and Mr. Ramey are still present, and seeing no comments regarding the single subject nature of the measure or the amendment to the Constitution. Ready for a motion?
Move that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 107, as a single subject, and the title board has jurisdiction to set title.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Move the title board finds that proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 107, does not only repeal in whole or in part a provision of the state constitution for purposes of section 14B of article 5 of the state constitution.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. And to the language, which I believe Mr. Ward has begun modifying.
Double check. Yeah. I move that we accept the changes to the staff draft as they appear on the screen and as they were made to proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 101.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Look okay to proponents?
I may just have
you. Sure, take your time.
Oh, wait, that was... Yeah, we're good.
I'm misreading my own measure. So.
Oh, I think we're fine. No, I could have taken us down a real rabbit hole the entire afternoon.
Okay, if proponents are okay and board members are okay, I'll read it in. State taxes shall be increased $1.9 billion annually by an amendment to the Colorado Constitution and a change to the Colorado Revised Statutes concerning funding relating to preschool through high school public education and, in connection therewith, creating an exception to the single rate state income tax for revenue that is dedicated to the funding of public schools, increasing income tax rates incrementally for individuals, trusts, and estates using four tax brackets starting at 0.37% for income above $100,000 and increasing to 3.87% for income above $500,000, increasing the corporate income tax rate by 1.37% for purposes of school district property taxes for property tax years commencing on or after January 1, 2019, reducing the current residential assessment rate of 7.2% to 7.0% and the current non-residential assessment rate of 29% to 24%, requiring the revenue from the income tax increases to be deposited in a dedicated public education fund and allowing the revenue collected to be retained and spent as a voter-approved revenue change, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate money from the fund to school districts to support early childhood through high school public educational programs on an equitable basis throughout the state without decreasing general fund appropriations, directing the legislature to enact, regularly review, and revise when necessary a new public school finance law that meets specified criteria until the legislature enacts a new public school finance law, requiring the legislature to annually appropriate the money in the fund to fully fund the existing public school finance formula and to support specified education programs and purposes, requiring the money in the fund to be used to support only public schools, requiring general fund appropriations for public education to increase by inflation up to 5% annually, and requiring the Department of Education to commission a study of the use of the money in the fund within 5 years.
I move the title board accept the title as it appears on the screen for proposed initiative number 2017-18, number 107.
Second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. That's unanimous. That concludes today's agenda. The time is 1:26.